heard on this show are not meant to replace professional health care and mental health treatment. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional help and are a UA student, you're encouraged to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it isn't an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Good evening. It's straight up 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We're broadcasting live again from the WVUA FM studio, 90.7, the Capstone on the campus of the University of Alabama. My name is Dr. BJ Gunther. I'm the host of the show. And in case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and particularly UA students. You can listen to us live each Tuesday night from 6 o'clock to 7 on 90.7. or online at www.wvuafm.ua.edu. And tonight we're taking questions via email. So if you have them, please email us questions now to brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. I'll give that email address out several times tonight. So if you have questions, you'll be able to go. And hopefully we'll be able to answer them live on the air if we get any. Let me remind you, this is not a call-in show, so I ask that you don't call into the station with questions at this time. But like I said before, you're welcome to email us some questions. Also, if you have ideas for upcoming shows, I would really appreciate some feedback and ideas for shows for the rest of this semester and fall. We don't do shows during the summer, but when we come back in the fall, I'm always looking for new ideas. And you can, once again, email us at brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. We'll consider using your idea for a show topic. This is only our second show for this semester, but we have lots of other shows planned. In fact, next week we're going to have a show about equine-assisted therapy, and in case you don't know what that is, it means using horses for therapeutic purposes. And there is a place here in town in Tuscaloosa, and we're going to have one of the owners come and talk to us about what they do at their farm. Also, one of the shows that I think is needed is public speaking fears, because we see so many students at the Counseling Center who come in for help with public speaking fears and other phobias, but mainly afraid to get up and talk in front of a class. And so I want to have a show that features the public speaking fear. Tonight we're discussing seasonal affective disorder and treatment for depression. I feel it's an important feature to talk about on the show, especially depression, because especially each semester, because I feel like it's pretty prominent with some of our students at the Counseling Center, and I think it's a topic that needs to be discussed more openly, and especially treatments, whether that's traditional treatment or alternative treatment. So I try to have a show each semester where we discuss depression. Depression is very treatable, and there are a variety of ways to treat depression if someone is willing to go for help or ask for help. Usually we invite two guests to be on the show, but tonight we're honored to have Dr. Paul Weir from Birmingham, who's driven down as our only guest, so we'll have him on for the whole hour tonight. If you have any questions for Dr. Weir, we'll try to answer those live on the air. brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. Send those to us right now, and we'll try to get to those. Dr. Weir, thank you for being on the show. I want to give you a proper introduction.
Glad to be here.
He's a graduate of one of my favorite campuses in this country. And no, it's not Auburn, even though you went to Auburn. Washington and Lee University in Lexington, Virginia.
It's a wonderful place. It's a long time ago. It was a guy's school only. It's changed. I'm not sure I'd have gotten in today's climate.
I love it. I love that campus. It's quaint. It's cute. It's small. I think VMI is close to it, right?
Next door.
But you also graduated from the University of Alabama School of Medicine, as well as you did your psychiatry, I don't know, do you call it residency?
Psychiatry residency at the University of Cincinnati.
That's right. And then you mentioned just a minute ago before we went on, you lived in Philadelphia for how long, 6 years?
I moved to Philadelphia to do my psychoanalytic training. And so I was at a private hospital and spent 6 years in training there before I moved back to Birmingham.
Which is very interesting. One of the things you mentioned to me when I called you and asked you to be on the show is that you do psychoanalysis, and not many psychiatrists that I've ever met actually pair those two.
I was one of the first ones in Alabama in 1985. Now there are a handful of us in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And it just adds a component to being a psychiatrist, but also somebody that knows and values psychotherapy and the role it plays in helping people get their lives in order.
Yeah, you know, I tell a lot of people who come and see me as a counselor, they expect that when they go and see a psychiatrist that they're going to get therapy.
Which is really not the case.
Exactly.
I'm a bit of an odd duck. When I finished my analytic training, one of the things I noticed that it's the first time I'd finished something and I'm moving and becoming an anachronism at the same time. And today's climate for psychiatry is more about being a psychopharmacologist and doing inpatient work. So there are not as many psychiatrists today, unfortunately, that really have the pleasure of being able to do what I do day in and day out. And it's really a lot of fun.
Tell us a little bit, you know, I wanted to talk some about seasonal affective disorder because of the time of year that it is right now. And in the past 2 weeks, coincidentally, I have had a couple of students that have said they feel like the shorter days have affected them. And I've tried to educate them on what seasonal affective disorder is.
It's a huge issue. And what happens is it's labeled a disorder. And I'm not so sure it really is a disorder. Mm-hmm. As much as it is, I think we go into hibernation in the winter. It's driven by the exposure to sunlight. December 21st, of course, is the shortest day of the year. It tends to be gray in Alabama in December and January. But sunlight is the antidote to this. So all those kids that were going to Fort Lauderdale or Panama City or the Keys or Mexico or Padre Island really were going to sunlight. If you think about this culturally, romantic poetry is about love blooms in the spring, mm-hmm. when most likely what happens is we all start waking up in the spring. And so seasonal affective disorder really is about people shutting down, losing their energy, they become lethargic, they want to sleep, they begin to crave sweets. If you think about it, the sort of joke is during the holidays, people gain weight. Well, what do bears do in the fall?
Gain weight.
They fatten up, mm-hmm. and hibernate.
Have babies.
And so it's about hibernation. And sunlight really is the treatment for this. And it can really nip people in the bud, really nail people because they won't know something's happening.
What do you mean?
You will just sort of slow down. And you won't really know what's happening, and it's gray and it's dull, and you don't feel like getting up, and it's raining, and you don't want to go to class, and you lay around, and you become lethargic, and you don't think as well, and sleep doesn't make you refreshed.
Is seasonal affective disorder, and I'm going to call it SAD, is it looked upon as a milder form of depression? Is it even looked upon as depression?
It's looked upon as depression, and it will shut you down. It's a different kettle of fish, and mm-hmm. it probably involves a different aspect of the brain. When we talk about depression, we really talk about it as if it is a single entity, when in fact, it is a multitude of illnesses, and nobody really knows the pathophysiology or the different circuits. There's not one depression, there's a handful of depressions, and this is most likely one of the subsets. But it's a slowing down, which you think about. That's what depression is we slow down from our normal self.
How I want to read, I always say this every week, but I try to do a little bit of research before I have a guest on, so I kind of look like I know what I'm talking about. So I want to read a little excerpt about the definition. Seasonal affective disorder is a cyclic illness characterized by recurrent episodes of fall-winter depression alternating with periods of spring-summer euthymia. Normal mood, or hypomania, mild elation, and behavioral activation. Can you comment?
You tend to see when people have hypomania, what that really means is they're accelerated, and most people don't complain about that. It's not a true mania the way we see in bipolar 1 disease.
Right.
It's just an elevated sense of well-being and energy, and very few people come to psychiatrists or counseling centers because they're really feeling good and vibrant and alive. But the sluggishness of seasonal affective illness is just sort of like turning the dimmer switch down. It's sort of fading away and just not really having much fun, not having much joy.
Do you see many, your practice is in Birmingham.
Right.
Do you see many college-aged individuals?
I see some. It is not my area of expertise, mm-hmm. but I have seen some in the last number of years. mainly because there are not as many college campuses, certainly none as large as there is here at Tuscaloosa.
What about, is with regards to seasonal affective disorder, do you have many patients with SAD?
I see it all the time. I really see it every day of the week. And the treatment for it is light therapy. And there is a light box you can go online, and there's good data about this at WebMD or Mayo Clinic or Cleveland Clinic or any of the more reputable sort of psychiatric programs, where you treat it with a light that you expose yourself to it in the morning and the afternoon at a certain wavelength, and it seems to work. Mm-hmm. I've had patients who had the means that I would say, look, you need to go to Miami if you can afford it for 2 or 3 days in January and December.
Yes.
I had a patient that was moving to Minnesota. They interviewed for the job and they said, you get 6 weeks vacation. He said, that's very generous. He said, no, you don't understand it. You have to get out of Minnesota for sunlight.
Yes.
In January, February, March.
Well, and that's
because people shut down.
And that goes into the next question I have. Do more people in the northern states have depression?
You go further north and the incidence of SAD goes way up. You go north, alcoholism in the Scandinavian, mm-hmm, in mm-hmm. Alaska,
Norway,
and
in the no
sunlight, you're going to see this all the time.
Huh.
It's you don't see it near the equator. The closer you get to the equator, the less the incidence of this issue.
We're gonna go to a break right now, and when we come back, I want to piggyback on this topic as far as. I read another article about students and college students in particular, how moving to other parts of the country affect Southern students who are going to college in the East, up in the Northeast.
Absolutely.
So when we come back, we're going to talk. We'll still be talking with Dr. Paul Weir. He's a psychiatrist in Birmingham. And we'll be back in just a minute talking about seasonal affective disorder and treatment. We're going to get to the treatment in a little bit. So you're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
You're listening to the voice of the University of Alabama, WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
I've lost my senses.
Hey, this is Rowan Lawler from St. Paul and the Broken Bones, and you're listening to 90.7 The Capstone.
That went away.
Matters on 90.7, and tonight we're talking about seasonal affective disorder and treatment for depression. And we've got Dr. Paul Weir. He's from Birmingham. Actually, your office is in Homewood.
In downtown Homewood.
Downtown Homewood, and he was kind enough to drive down and talk to us about how to help yourself or how to get help, but some of the treatment. And in the break, we were just talking about Dr. Weir actually lived in Ohio and Pennsylvania, and he can speak firsthand to seeing people who live in the colder climates where it's darker and dingier, and people get more depressed, would you say?
I remember one spring break, but it was March. We drove down to the Florida Keys, and within 24 hours, I had more energy than I'd had in 6 months. And I wasn't depressed, but all of a sudden, and it wasn't because I was on vacation, because I liked what I was doing, but my brain woke up.
Yeah.
In the sunlight. And as we were talking at the break, my whole office is glass. The whole back of the office is glass. So when I see patients all day long, there is sunlight in there all day long. I think it's a huge issue. We also were talking about southern students going north. And you really have to think about that, because it's really gray for a long period mm-hmm. of time.
You just said if you had a patient, or if I had a student that was considering, let's say, if they were diagnosed with depression and considering a graduate school in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. Nothing against those states, but it might make it worse.
I would be careful about it. There is some treatment for it, and if the light boxes, which we're going to go into in a minute, mm-hmm. work, but you would need to take that into consideration. I think it's always ironic. Where is the coffee capital of the United States?
Seattle.
They don't grow coffee in Seattle.
Where is it then?
It is the coffee, okay. But they don't grow it there.
Right, no.
Well,
Jamaica.
Isn't Seattle known for its rainy, 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 gray days? And you can get coffee everywhere. You wonder whether people are jump-starting themselves all day long with coffee.
Uh-huh. That makes sense.
Of course.
What about like HR departments or big companies that their employees do not have windows in their offices?
Just
on a sidebar.
It's not a good thing. And if you want productivity, working without windows is a recipe for shutting you down. This is sunlight driven. This is sunlight through the retina to the optic part of the brain.
Yeah, talk about the chemical reaction that happens with photosynthesis, melatonin, serotonin, what else?
Well, think about it in the animal kingdom. Birds migrate. They don't migrate because of food. They migrate because of sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
They come north, they go south.
Mm-hmm.
Butterflies do the same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really knows the specific pathways in terms of what does or does not do it. And when you start talking about neurotransmitters, which we'll probably get into later in this talking, mm-hmm. it really gets confusing because there are 14 different serotonin neurotransmitters. That's not counting norepinephrine. That's not counting dopamine. That's not counting glutamate. That's not counting NMDA neuroreceptors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not counting a whole host of them. And they all have exquisite feedback loops on one another.
Mm-hmm.
So serotonin feeds back on dopamine and controls the release of dopamine and back and forth. So when we get into that part of the discussion, we're really going to talk about biological equilibrium. And that mm-hmm. also is going to lead into talking about depression in a few minutes.
How about with regards to sleep? What is the connection between seasonal affective disorder and sleep? Is there anything any different from clinical depression and sleep problems?
Well, sleep is, we're on a college campus, and I'm not even sure sleep happens on a college campus. I'm not sure if most college kids sleep when they go out. Sleep in and of itself is incredibly helpful for brain health.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us don't really think of our brain as an organ. We think of our brain as who we are.
Yes.
And the fact is, it's an organ. And like a heart, like the liver, like the kidneys, there are things that we can do that can promote optimal function, and there are things that we can do that can compromise function.
Mm-hmm.
And lack of sleep will compromise brain function.
So one of the articles that I read about melatonin and seasonal affective disorder is, and it has to do, you mentioned the light boxes. Let me see if I get this straight. The light boxes, any kind of light is going to stop the melatonin, because the melatonin that's released in your brain is what makes you sleepy.
There's an interesting system called the hypocretin-cretin system. It gets complicated. There's a switch on and they switch off.
Okay.
One switches on, the other one switches off. Everything, when you think about the brain, you think about balance and you think about equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
You think about circadian rhythms. You think about biological rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as it switches on and we wake up, it's also starting to switch off. And when we mess with our circadian rhythms, when we mess with these biological rhythms, we're throwing our brain off. And that's why we have caffeine. That's why we stay up late. Remember, people used to go to bed at dark. I'm not advocating that, but people used to go to bed at dark. They got up with the sunrise.
Uh-huh.
We've been on the planet for a long time. Our biological systems, including those systems that regulate brain function, are tied into sunlight and to the rhythms of that. And we throw them out of whack all the time.
All the time. And that's when we see so many students. I've said this many times before on this show. That's when we see students that come into the counseling center because their sleep is out of whack. and they can't regulate it. They can't get it back to normal.
I just had a young person that was in college, was really having a tough time the first 3 days, but they were jet lagged. And they got off the jet and they went to bed and had 3 hours sleep and went to class, but they were jet lagged. And so for 2 or 3 days, they were in a really tough spot because the brain wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Once they got back into the rhythm of being in Alabama and not being in Europe, they did fine. And so if you think about a student that stays up to 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning cramming for exam, they're going to compromise themselves in that exam, and they're going to compromise themselves in the classes going forward.
You know, I see so many students that don't put it together either. They don't put together their poor sleep with their poor performance, because most of the time in the past, they've been able to perform on poor sleep.
Well, it's a lot more complicated. It's a lot more competitive at this point. Also, for most of us, I did go to college, and I had a lot of fun at 10 and 11 and 12 and 1 o'clock. And so it's competitive between what you want to do for taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I know people that don't go out till 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, yeah. That's common.
And there's some significant studies about sleep deprivation and performance in terms of, it's similar to being drunk driving.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of brain function and brain performance.
Wow. How do you know when to get help? How would somebody know when to get help? How do they know, you know, when should someone seek help?
We look for patterns. You look for repetitive patterns.
Okay.
And you also, depression is you quit being your normal self. Each of us has sort of a baseline of where we know we're okay. We know when we wake up if we've got a sore throat. We know if we're coming down with a cold.
Mm-hmm.
We know if our stomach's upset. But if we start feeling like, I'm not myself, I'm not myself, I'm not myself, and you can't get out of it, you try to get out of it. You eat better. You exercise. You try to get some sleep.
And nothing's working.
And nothing's working. Then you've got to say, wait a minute, I'm no longer my best self. Maybe something's going on. Plus, when you're depressed, most people feel blue. The things they usually enjoy, they don't enjoy as much.
Right. I mean, even if you Google symptoms of depression, loss of interest is going to be one of the first things that comes up.
Absolutely. The other thing that's tricky about depression, and this is very, very pertinent for a college campus, we talk about depression as a mood disorder, but there are cognitive changes associated with depression. Your brain doesn't work as well. It's going to be harder to write that paper. It's going to be harder to do that organic chemistry. It's going to be harder to do that sociology research. It's harder to think when we're depressed.
Mm-hmm.
It is not just a mood disorder. There are huge cognitive components to depression.
Right, that you have to consider. You know, you mentioned the light boxes. When I was reading some of the articles, researchers have come up with, and maybe you've heard of this, LED light blinds. Have you ever heard of that?
No, that's new for me.
Yeah, I hadn't ever heard of that either, where you can actually hang your blinds up and set them to come on at a certain time and wake you up.
You're talking like, dawn stimulator.
Yeah, like if you have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and it's still dark. You know, shift workers have to do that, but I bet they're incredibly expensive, but...
Well, there are dawn stimulators where you put a timer on the lights, and the light mimics the dawn coming up.
Because like slow, a sunrise?
Absolutely. I don't know much about those. I know more about the light boxes, at least in theory. My problem with the light boxes, I haven't been able to get anybody to use them.
I was going to ask you, how do you, I would think if somebody would use them and get positive results that common sense would tell you they keep using them.
But
they're not cheap, are they?
They're not cheap. They're not terribly expensive, but they're not. The problem is when you're depressed, it's hard to mobilize your resources to do the very things that are likely to help.
Right.
When you're depressed, you don't feel like eating healthy. When you're depressed, you don't feel like going to the gym. When you're depressed, you just curl over in bed and you don't turn the light box on. That's the real wicked part of depression. And when I have depressed patients, they say, I would do all those things, but I'm depressed. That's why I can't do them. I'm not myself.
When we're about to come up on our half hour break, but I want to start talking about your practice in Birmingham. You have a wonderful website that I've researched, and it's TM. Give us the website.
It's TMS Birmingham.
Right. .com. And TMS stands for, tell us a little bit about TMS.
TMS stands for transcranial magnetic stimulation. It is an FDA-approved treatment for major depression, which was approved in 2008. There probably are about maybe 500 or 600 of these machines in the country. It's an MRI magnet. And like an MRI magnet, it delivers electromagnetic pulses to the brain, which sounds very, very strange.
And scary.
And scary.
It does. It's scary. And that's why I asked you when we were talking before the show, I'm sure the general public can be skeptical, but also our professionals, our colleagues, I think would be skeptical.
Well, psychiatrists traditionally have not really had much ways to intervene. We have a prescription pad. ECT is about the only real interventional psychiatry.
Which stands for?
Electroconvulsive therapy, mm-hmm. which has been around forever. So we don't have a history as psychiatrists of doing things. And this came as a research tool, and it is a new weapon in the treatment of depression. But we don't have a history of having much of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We pull out our prescription pad and talk to people and wish them good luck. And this is a very different
thing.
And hope it works.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about this very interesting. It's not an alternative treatment because it is FDA approved, but I had never heard about it until I started researching you, and it's just fascinating. So when we come back, we're going to finish talking about TMS. So stay tuned. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
And I was strong and merry when jumped the hedges first. And I will drink the clean water for the quench my thirst. Did I show out the ferry boats and they'll get high on a blue ocean against tomorrow's sky? And I will never grow so old again. Then I will walk and talk in gardens all wet with rain. Sweet thing, sweet thing, yeah. Sweet thing, yeah.
Hey, what's up? Holla at ya boy. XOXOXO. You getting these texts? ? Where are you? What are you doing? OMG, you are making me mad. You better text me back. I'm waiting outside your house.
Relentless, aggressive texting is like sending an angry robot to deliver your message. When does the robot become dangerous? Let us know at thatsnotcool.com.
Thatsnotcool.com.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Evan.
And Chris.
And Jordan.
From the doctors and the lawyers. Keep on moving. 90.7 The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
I'm sitting here talking to Dr. Weir from Birmingham. Hopefully you can hear us. Do we have some technical difficulties? Okay. And we're talking about TMS, which stands for transcranial magnetic
stimulation.
The S gets me. I want to say syndrome.
Absolutely.
Because I'm so used to saying that. But in between the break, we were talking about some of the amazing stories of treatment and, would you say, full remission. of depression.
No symptoms.
It's really kind of hard, you know, for somebody like me to believe that, even though I do believe it. It's just so hard to believe, because when you see somebody who is so depressed that they can't even get out of bed and they can't take care of themselves, and to go from that to, I don't know if you'd say feeling 100%.
Feeling like themselves.
Yeah,
I'd never seen this before. I'd been a psychiatrist for over 30 years, and I'd been an analyst for over 25 years. And until I saw this with my own eyes, I'd never seen anything like this. And I had seen people respond to antidepressants. It has nothing to do at all with the response someone gets from antidepressants.
What's the what does the research say in comparison with antidepressants and TMS? You know what I mean?
The original research to get the FDA approval was a 53% response rate and a 33% remission rate. There's a huge study called the STAR-D study, which has nothing to do with transcranial magnetic stimulation. But it has to do with a 2006 study with 4,000 patients finding out what rate do people respond to antidepressants. So in this study, everybody got Celexa, which is a standard SSRI antidepressant.
Mm-hmm.
And they measured the response rate to Celexa. And a response rate meant you had to take it at a therapeutic dose for 8 weeks. And the response rate, if you take an antidepressant, is 1 in 3. So you have a 1 in 3 chance, if you've got major depression, to respond to the first antidepressant.
Okay.
Which is great if you're one of those 1 in 3. If you're one of those 2/3, you then start the hunt for the next medication. The next medication, if you switch on the STAR-D study, again, it showed about 1 out of 3 of the next group will respond. Then you start adding on. You start augmenting with second antidepressants. You start augmenting with drugs like Abilify or Lithium or Depakote.
Mood stabilizers.
Mm-hmm. And then the odds get really, really much difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So about 2 out of 3 people will major depression will respond, but 1/3 won't respond. And so this has added a new arrow in the quiver for the treatment of depression. And unlike antidepressants, which are great when they work, this treatment also has no side effects. When I give people an antidepressant, that drug goes everywhere in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the side effects come from. This is stimulating a circuit of the brain, and there, other than some discomfort initially in getting adjusted to the treatment, there are no systemic side effects. There are when you get with Lexapro or Zoloft,
mm-hmm,
or Wellbutrin. All of those drugs can be really, really helpful, but they also can cause some major side effects. TMS doesn't cause side effects. It works in a different sort of way.
Tell the listeners what you told me before the show, exactly how it works, exactly what happens, you know, how the machine looks, and I'm assuming you're in the office with them. And you actually, is it like headphones, or what is it like?
The machine looks exactly like a dental chair. It goes up and back, and there's a process whereby you standardize the chair to fit the physique of the person, because mm-hmm, you're using their head. The head is going to be treated. Their head is going to be fixed in place in a soft, sort of a soft cradle. And so you have to standardize the chair, because we've treated people 6'6",
yeah,
and we've treated people 5'1".
Mm-hmm.
The magnet sits on your head, and it looks like a sort of angled clump, and it rests gently on your head, on the left part of your head above your eye.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the left dorsolateral prefrontal cortex,
mm-hmm,
and that is the thinking part of your brain. That's the perspective part of the brain. That's the judgment part of the brain.
Uh-huh.
The magnet sits there, and it delivers electromagnetic pulses. Electromagnetic pulse creates an electrical pulse. A changing magnetic pulse creates an electrical pulse. Neurons work two ways. They work electrically, and they work chemically.
Uh-huh.
So an electrical impulse from the machine goes down the axon of the nerve cell, causing it to release neurotransmitters like, mm-hmm, dopamine and serotonin, the ones we've talked about earlier. And so you get a cascade, and you hammer these nerve cells 3,000 times per treatment over 37 and a half minutes. So it would be like me taking you to the gym and say, you sit in this comfortable chair, and I'm going to do 3,000 bicep curls. You don't have to do anything. Your bicep will start to grow. It'll get better blood flow. It'll get protein synthesis. It essentially will wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this does, is it wakes up brain cells.
Is TMS only for patients who have clinical depression?
It's been FDA.
Are there limits, you know?
There are limits to this because it has been FDA approved for major depression. However, most people that are depressed also have symptoms of anxiety.
Okay.
Very seldom does somebody come in with a pure depression, but it seems to work on both sides of that. There's some investigation on, there's some research on through the VA system for post-traumatic stress disorder, but for right now, it is really only approved for major depression.
And you told me that this year, I think, most insurance are covering, or Blue Cross and Blue Shield?
Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Alabama has approved this as of maybe 4 or 5 months ago. And it's a pre-approval. You have to go through a pre-approval process.
Right.
Which is not really very complicated. What they essentially are saying, you must have failed 2 antidepressant trials.
Yes, yes.
In the original research for the TMS machine, the average number of trials of medication ranged from 4 to 23. And I just wrote a letter for a patient last week that had been on at least 13 different medications. And we're talking about a year, year and a half. Again, when the medicines work, they're great. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
This
they
is
save
for when,
lives.
They,
yes.
Absolutely. And they are wonderful. And they're really good things when they work. But this gives us an alternative when they don't work that is different and is without all those side effects.
Do you use antidepressants with TMS, or can you?
Almost all the patients that come to see us are on antidepressants.
Okay.
People get on antidepressants, and even if they are not working beautifully, they're terrified to come off of them. Their doctor is afraid that they could be worse. So we invariably treat almost all our patients are on some combination. And we don't mess around with them too much. There's some restrictions. You cannot take Klonopin and Valium and Librium and Xanax within 6 to 8 hours or more before you have the treatment, because it will make it hard for those nerve cells to fire.
To process.
Yes, you have the magnet has, each person's brain is different. And what we do is we put the magnet over the motor cortex of the brain on the left side, because if that's how we tell how strong the magnet needs to be. So we put it over the motor cortex on the left side, we prop their right arm up, and we turn the magnet up to increasingly stronger doses until the fingers of the right hand begin to twitch.
Uh-huh.
And that's called the motor threshold. And it varies from one person to the next. The treatment area is in front of that, but that's how we calibrate. And if we have to get, the motor neurons to twitch.
You know, when I was studying psychology 100 years ago, we learned about ECT, electroconvulsive therapy. And that sounds, the twitching, when you said the right hand twitching, it sounds a little bit like that. How is it different?
Well, first of all, you're wide awake when it twitches.
Right, no anesthesia.
There's no anesthesia. You come from work, you come from home, you come from wherever.
And with ECT, you usually have anesthesia.
Yeah, ECT, you have anesthesia.
Yes.
So there is an anesthesiologist there. There's a psychiatrist there. The muscles are paralyzed.
Uh-huh.
You have to have a bag for breathing. This is, you climb in the dental chair, you sit down, the magnet gets put on your head. And I do therapy while I have my patients in the office. Since I'm an analyst, I'm used to seeing people 5 days a week.
Uh-huh.
So I once I get people feeling a little bit better, we do therapy every single day. So it's a sort of double whammy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my background as an analyst, of knowing how to see people 5 days a week. It's an unusual combination.
I asked you this earlier because I'm curious, and you told me the answer, but I want you to say it on the show. Are people's heads sore after they have this treatment?
The first 1 or 2 days, it's very disconcerting because, as we were talking, I had it done to me in preparation for the training. And the eyes sometimes twitch a little bit because any nerve on the surface that's within the magnetic field will be depolarized.
Mm-hmm.
We've had people, there's studies where people would fall asleep during the treatment, which didn't work very well. But people adjust to almost anything.
Uh-huh.
Within 2 to 3 visits, most people don't know the things on their head. They get beyond
it. They get used to it.
Some mm-hmm. people will have headaches. Some people will take Advil or Tylenol for the first couple of days. But we've had most people within a very short period of time. Now, we have had a few people who can't tolerate the intensity of the left side. And though this is not FDA approved, you also can treat the right side.
Uh-huh.
There's a study that a woman did at the University of Pennsylvania with 10 pregnant women, and they did TMS on the right side. They uh-huh. were concerned with the intensity of 10 pulses per second on the left side that it might cause a seizure. So she treated these 10 pregnant women on the right side, one pulse per second, different parameters. So instead of 10 per second for 4 seconds, it's 1 per second for the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thought was it would not kindle a seizure. And 7 of those pregnant women got better.
Are there any other disorders or any other problems that TMS treats other than depression?
It's the only thing it's approved for. Some more of my ambitious colleagues will try it for some other things.
I'm curious.
I'm not sure. But most of us try to stick to major depression. But again, as I mentioned earlier, very few people come in with purely depression. People come in with depression. People come in with anxiety.
Right.
People come in with a sort of a mixture of symptoms.
Does it ever help sleep disorders?
Nobody that has depression sleeps worth a hoot.
Right.
And so it will normalize sleep when it works.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk a lot about sleep hygiene. And also, a lot of people are sleeping too much when they're depressed, or they're
exactly.
napping, or they're messing their sleep cycle up.
Yeah.
And this will get people back to themselves. When this works, what patients say to me is, they don't say, I'm no longer depressed. They say, I am back to being me, which is a very different kettle of fish.
It is. And some people don't even know what that is.
Well, some people have not felt themselves for a long
That's
period
right.
of time.
That's right.
I've had people who said, I haven't felt like this in 20 years, which is really, really amazing to see it. And there's a lot of doubt about this and a lot of concern, but it is FDA approved, and it really is going to change the way we treat depression.
I think so, too.
And it's going to be a better treatment. It's only been out 6 or 7 years. It's getting refined. There's a LinkedIn connection where TMS providers around the country stay in touch with one another
right.
if they're having something that's not working. And so it's a very exciting thing. And this is just TMS 1. 2, 3, and 4 are going to be so much better than this.
We'll talk about that when we come back off the break. We're going to take a break real quick. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
You're listening to the voice of the University of Alabama, 90.7 The Capstone.
90.7.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. We've got Dr. Paul Weir, who is a psychiatrist and a psychoanalyst from Birmingham. And we're talking tonight, we started talking about seasonal affective disorder and depression, and now we're talking about treatment for depression, and not just antidepressants. We're talking about transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is TMS for short. Dr. Weir, have you been doing this for 6 years?
I've been doing this for 3.5 years. 3.5 going on 4 years.
Does a medical doctor have to administer this type of treatment?
Only psychiatrists can administer this.
Okay.
Treatment. This has not been approved except for psychiatrists, because major depression is our world.
Right. That's your specialty.
It's our specialty.
Yeah.
And even though family practice doctors write a lot of antidepressants and see more depressed patients than we do,
mm-hmm.
and so do internists and so do OBGYN, the thing is this is what we are specifically trained to do and have been specifically trained to do it from day one of our residency. So it's a very unique treatment, and that psychiatrists are the only physicians that can use this treatment.
How many in the state of Alabama are doing this? Anybody other than you?
There are probably six or seven in the state of Alabama. I'm the only one in Birmingham. Yeah. I have a former student of mine that is up in Huntsville that I stay in close contact with. There are a couple of others that I'm not personally friends with, so I don't have the kind of close relationship I do with a friend of mine who has a Dr. Charles Hayden in Madison.
How did you get involved? How did you get interested in this? When did you first hear about it? Or
I had been reading about it, and I had had some patients that had really not had adequate responses to antidepressants and not really had adequate responses to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And UAB at the time, the medical school in the Department of Psychiatry, at that time had a transcranial magnetic stimulation machine.
Really?
They since have closed it, but they had one at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I became aware of it, and it was as silly as a salesman came by my office when I didn't have a patient, and he could have sold me anything.
Oh, no.
And I also had just turned 60, and I thought, I need to think going forward. I've got a 12-year-old son. I thought, okay, I've got to start looking at some alternatives.
Right.
And so I researched it, called some people that had been doing it for a while, and I added it to my... Also, for the fun of it, it's hard to imagine this for the fun of it, but I am curious about this sort of stuff. And so I now have a practice of general psychiatry, psychoanalytic therapy, and TMS. And the TMS, I've added my therapy to that, which I didn't do the model, which was not to be with the patient except for the first few treatments.
What percentage would you say of your practice is patients use TMS?
Right now, I only have one person in the chair.
Uh-huh.
Last 2 years ago, we might have six to eight.
Mm-hmm.
It just varies. I think it will pick back up now that Blue Cross has approved it in Alabama.
Right.
Because we've had a lot of people, because it's a very expensive treatment, we've had a lot of people that probably would have been good candidates for it, but could not afford the $12,000 to $14,000 out-of-pocket cost.
Yes.
But so I think it will change, and I think it will be more of a common part of my practice.
I mean, this is an obvious, I think I know the answer to this, but what's the most rewarding part of your job as a psychiatrist?
The most rewarding part of my job is not to bring people back to themselves, but as a psychiatrist, it's more of a psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, is to watch people become better than they've ever been in their lives,
mm-hmm.
Function better at home, function better with their family, be a better father, be a better mom,
mm-hmm.
be a better student. It's to watch people come alive and sort of regain their sense of excitement about what the world and what life has to offer. And that's one of the really cool things. You got to be patient, and you got to be relentless.
And I know as a therapist, you can get frustrated.
Oh, absolutely.
Too, you
absolutely.
Know, and that's probably another reason you wanted to look at another way to treat people, because the same treatment was not working for a lot of people.
I've had people that I've had no more medicines I could write. I had no more therapy I had to offer. And to watch something like TMS take these people to a place that the other two wouldn't work, it's pretty amazing. Also, as a biology science background, it's pretty cool to watch it. It's kind of Star Wars, this won't resonate. It's kind of science fiction to watch this sort of thing do things that I've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
To watch somebody that's been on the floor of their professional office, seeing a medical professional that I was working with, would see their patients curl up on the sofa, hadn't been out of the house in months. That Friday night, go to dinner with their husband for the first time in years.
Yeah.
And the husband's calling me crying, going, "What did you do? I've got my wife back."
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool stuff. Even at my age, it's still pretty cool stuff.
On the backside of that, what's the most challenging part? Is it the having to have patience or being frustrated at seeing people who are not getting better?
The hardest thing about being a healthcare provider in this field is when people are stuck and can't get better.
Yes.
Because you cannot do this without a big heart. You cannot do this, without some compassion and with a real, real sense of enthusiasm and making a difference in people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And not trying your best and not being able to bring relief to people. It's a pretty difficult thing to sort of wear. You get used to it. but it's never easy and it never feels right. And maybe that's one of the other reasons I did this TMS, is it gave me another option to make a difference in people's lives.
How can listeners reach you?
TMSBirmingham.com. I think that's my website.
All your information.
I don't go to my own website. I don't know. I don't call my phone. I don't go to my website, so I don't ever know what's on there. But that's the way you can reach
me. Are you taking new patients?
I do. Actually, I return phone calls. I don't overbook.
He does.
I save my
return phone calls. That is.
I want to have fun practicing, and so I've kept my practice manageable for me.
Because you taught for how many years at UAB?
I taught for 18 years at UAB in the Department of Psychiatry.
Hmm. That's something. Thank you for being here.
It's been a joy.
Thank you for driving down.
Hope it's been helpful. It's a beautiful campus. Even though I went to Auburn, it's a beautiful.
Oh, don't say that.
It's also so massive.
I know. We've grown. We've grown so much. It's almost unrecognizable when you haven't been here in so many years.
Absolutely.
Go enjoy dinner.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. I want to read something. I always like to say goodnight before we go off the air. Our shows are recorded and podcasted on the Counseling Center's website at counseling.ua.edu. If you want to listen to past shows, just click on the Brain Matters icon. It'll take you straight to the shows. I also want to mention that the Counseling Center offers QPR training upon request. QPR stands for Question, Persuade, and Refer. 3 steps anyone can learn to help prevent suicide. Do your part, and in 2 short hours, learn the warning signs for suicide and 3 simple skills of how to intervene and save someone's life who's suicidal. To sign up for free QPR Gatekeeper training for suicide prevention for your department or individually, or if you have questions about QPR, please contact the Counseling Center at 348-3863. Just like CPR, QPR is an emergency response to someone in crisis and can save lives. I want to thank everybody who's made this show possible. Dr. Keyes at the Counseling Center, he's the Executive Director, Terry Siggers, Office of Student Media, my production assistants, Natalie and Dorothy Beck and Al Johnson, and my colleagues at the Counseling Center, WVUA staff, and also my guest tonight, Dr. Paul Ware. Don't forget, there's a men's basketball game right after this. I'm heading over to see Alabama beat Florida, hopefully at 8 p.m. in Coleman Coliseum. Thanks so much for listening tonight. I'm Dr. B.J. Gunther. This has been Brain Matters on 90.7, The Capstone.
I brought you. Not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you're in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.